So on this battlefield of Kurukshetra, also known as Dhanmakshetra, or a place, a holy place, there Mamaka, my sons, and the sons of Pandu, they have assembled. Dhritarashtra was getting worried, because Dhritarashtra knew very well that the Pandavas were very pious, and therefore, in a holy place, they were likely to become more powerful, when his own sons were not so pious. So therefore, he was worried about the outcome of the war. So many had actually taken... So many had actually taken the side of the Pandavas. No one had ever expected it. The Kurus, they were the ruling kings, so they had a very large army and they naturally had established themselves. So many had sworn loyalty to the royal house, so that was automatic. So they simply needed to call upon their allies and that was it. But the Pandavas, they from nowhere, they got so many allies. It was shocking, unexpected. So it looked quite serious. And what seemed to have been initially an easy thing, you know, five Pandavas against 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, 500 against 5, usually means, you know, 5 finished. But in this case, it didn't look like that at all. So Dhritarashtra was getting worried. He asked Sanjaya, his secretary, and Sanjaya, he was, by the mercy of his spiritual master, because he had served his spiritual master, he was able to perceive Krishna. And therefore, although Sanjaya was not present on the battlefield, still he could see everything. So that is ultimately the result. If we become purified, we can see Krishna. Otherwise, naham prakasa sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. Otherwise, for the conditioned soul, Krishna remains avritta. He remains covered. We cannot see him. Even those who are trying to become free from the influence of material nature, even they cannot see him. Even devotees who chant Hare Krishna sometimes cannot see him. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. There are moments we cannot see him, and that is the difficulty. Then doubt sets in. Avitam jnanami tena kamarupena kunteya duspurina nalena cha. It is explained that it is actually the influence of lust that causes this covering. It is due to lust, due to the desire to exploit the material energy. Atmindriya prithivansa tarabolikam. When we are thinking me and my senses, and everything is meant to serve me, and I am meant to be king. There was an old film, which I still remember, and it was called Midnight Cowboy. And in that film, there is this man. He is living in an old squat house, somewhere behind a construction site in an empty building, and he's crippled. He is just a cripple, and he's poor, obviously living in such a place. But then, in the middle of the film, his name is Ratso, somehow or other, to give him an appropriate name. And then in the middle of the film, Ratso has a dream. And in this dream, he's in a 5-star hotel, in a smoking, lying on some sort of fancy cushioned bed next to the swimming pool, while 5 girls are attending to him. One is filing his nails, another one massaging his shoulders, other one pouring drinks and so on. And this is Ratso's dream. Ratso's dream. So he is dreaming someone's enjoyment. So many varieties of dreaming are there. And of course his dream never comes true. He's still on the bus. So many dreams in the material world may not come true. Admendriya Prithiranjya. Because we are interested in putting ourselves in the center. As a result, we are covered. And then, when we are covered, we come in a difficult situation. Arjuna finds himself on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he finds that his family is divided over both armies. Senyor Ubayor Maje, he is going between the two armies, while Krishna is driving the chariot, and then he sees how his family members are very determined to fight. And he's going, what is the point of all this? This doesn't make sense. Why would we slaughter each other? We are a family. I mean, this doesn't make sense. A war where family members are divided on either side and ready to kill each other. He said, I don't want to be part of this. I'm going to the forest. I'm not fighting. He refused to fight. Govinda Nayuyutsavaha. Govinda, I shall not fight, he says. But then, in the next stage, Arjuna is totally confused. Because although he says he won't fight, on the other hand, he strongly feels it's also his duty to fight, because he's a warrior. Therefore, he doesn't know anymore what to do. On the one hand, his sense of duty, on the other hand, emotions. Then, at that point, he turns to Krishna in confusion. And he says, he surrenders to Krishna, and he says, now I'm your disciple, please instruct me. Now tell me the truth. Yes, now I'm surrendering unto you. And then Krishna, Krishna does that. Asochana vasochastram pragyavasam sabhasa se katasuna gatasun stamnana sushanti pandatya. The first thing Krishna says, to say it very simple in modern language, you're making a big thing out of nothing. Or you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief, to say it in more traditional language. But as we say nowadays, you're making a big thing out of nothing. Right? You're familiar with that. Yes, but a big thing out of nothing. But what are we talking about here? We're talking about many people dying. Big thing out of nothing. We're talking about people that are about to slaughter each other. And all in one family. A big thing out of nothing. That doesn't look like nothing. That looks serious. And Arjuna gives good arguments not to fight. Because Arjuna explains. He says that when the elders, my elders are fighting. Yes. And when the elders will be killed, then the young generation is lost. Without elders, they are lost. Of course, nowadays, elders have been thrown away a long time ago as useless in our cultures. No longer is there so much respect for the elders as there was 5,000 years ago, at the time of Arjuna. So it is explained. The elders are protecting the purity of society. Well, Krishna is explaining, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief, and Krishna is basically beginning to explain why. He explains, Nanda, the soul, Najayate Mriyate Vakadachin, the soul never takes birth, the soul never dies. He establishes that. Or, Naino Nam Sindanti Sastani Nainam Dati Pavaka, the soul cannot be cut to pieces, not burned to fire, dried by the wind, or all these kind of things. So in this way he established the eternity of the soul in the second chapter. Which is the beginning. In the third chapter, he speaks about lust. Several verses, all describing lust, and how lust is the Nitya Vairina, the eternal enemy of the living being. And how the living being is somehow or other caught by lust. Not only human beings, all living beings are caught by lust. So it is described. There are 8,400,000 species of life. So many, from very complex species to germs, right? But all are driven by lust. So even the germs are driven by lust. Lusty germs. So next time you're in an argument, you can call the other person, "You lusty germ." That will make it clear. Anyway, so that's interesting. From the fourth chapter on, the Bhagavad Gita, till the sixth chapter, we're slowly coming to the point that there is a need for sense control. That unless we control the senses, we will be a slave of the senses. Rupa Goswami describes that kamalinam kutita pulita dunidesis tisa jatamayina karuna tatapatraya, and he explains that the senses are merciless. He says they're na karuna natapatraya, they're merciless, because whatever you do for them, whatever you do for them, it's never enough. Bring now for my enjoyment. Now. Yes. Of course. Cannot say no. I'll supply whatever you desire. But when you bring, then all the senses say, "Is that all? Is that all? Bring more." It's never enough. Na karuna na tapatraya. Rupa Goswami explains, no mercy, no matter how much tapatraya, no matter how much austerity you perform. So like this. Then, in these chapters, up to the sixth chapters, we get a description of different types of yoga. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, and so on. Karma yoga, engage your work. So, karma niye vadikaraste ma phale sukada chana ma karma phale hi tu ur te sangusto karma ni. That we have a right to work, but we don't have a right for the fruits of our work. The fruits of the work belong to Krishna. They must be offered to Krishna. So whatever we do, yes, work from morning to night. But if you wish, but offer it to Krishna. The fruits of our labor, they are for Krishna. So in this way, Krishna is explaining. So this is something that sounds so alien, so awkward, so alien to this time. I mean, in this day and age, that sounds like doesn't make sense. But if you think about it, all the selfishness in the world doesn't make sense. So if we see that we become selfless and actually work and give to Krishna. The other day I was making a presentation about a gift economy instead of a economy which is based on each man for himself, or you can say a dog eats dog economy, pushing others out of the way, heavy competition type of economy. That kind of economy, each man for himself, that is what the world has. So that economy creates bad relationships. That economy, each man for himself, creates distrust in all relationships. then even marriage becomes a business agreement. And even then, better to make a contract. The other approach is very different. It's known as an economy based on generosity. An economy based on giving. It's not based on profit, it's based on goodwill. And you give. And by giving to others, you create goodwill. And then, when you need, it also comes back. And the more you give, the more others will also give. And the more, somehow or other, everything will go on. It's not going on in this day and age so much. But that's the traditional culture. The traditional culture, Vedic culture, which was once very prominent in the world, right? That was the culture. Even outside of India, the influence of that Vedic culture was strong. So this culture of just giving is a big thing. And there's still many traditions in the world where hospitality is like a sacred thing. Right? Someone comes to your house, you have to feed them, and you know. It's like in any Muslim country, you cannot go to someone's house and you have to take something, you have to feed a visitor. Same in traditional India, like that. And you could go anywhere, anywhere, as a stranger. Just go, I'm hungry. Okay, please come. Or like in Bangladesh, where the funny thing was, we went to Bangladesh, Raja also went. And Bangladesh is known as a very poor country, one of the poorest countries in the world. So when you think of Bangladesh, you think people are starving, there's nothing to eat. What was the experience? Well, apart from that, was there nothing to eat? It started already with a big feast, remember? And they came from the airport and we went to the first town and there was a band playing in the town and I thought maybe a marriage because that's what they have usually. But it wasn't, it was us. And it carried on. Huh? It carried on. Then this incredible feast and then an incredible kirtan. It's just... And it's funny because in terms of money, right? In terms of money, Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries in the world. But if you look in terms of natural opulence, we saw mango trees everywhere, we saw so many natural, we saw so many coconuts, we saw so much natural opulence, so we realized it's not all about money here, it's people just, they live straight from the land, what they've got, so it doesn't translate into money, and therefore it shows like poverty, but actually they live in opulence, in natural opulence. Anyway, this principle of giving and creating goodwill, that you are not in the spirit of taking the fruits of your work, but that you say, no, these fruits I'm going to use for the glorification of Krishna, so I will sponsor all the prasadam for all the devotees. I have many times, and I'll say it again today, proposed that 30 families invite each other one day a month to their house, and they cook a feast. In that way, you have to cook only once a month. And you cook only once a month, and you get a feast every day. Yeah? It's such a simple solution. And every day with the devotees, it's a program every night. It takes only 30 families. And you got the month covered. So, is it a good proposal? Then if you do it, and you invite me, and you really do it, Then I'll stay for a whole month. So then you come to every night. Can consider it. Anyway, so then the Bhagavad Gita continues, and at the end of the sixth chapter, it has described different types of yoga: karma yoga, engaging one's work in the service of Krishna, jnana yoga, through philosophy, trying to understand Krishna, but then explaining that bhakti yoga is the highest. Yoginam abhisarve sammatkate namtaratma. It is explaining that this is the highest. Bhajitam, bhajate, yomam, to worship me. Sāme yuktatamāmatā. That is the highest. Because, in the next chapter it says, maya shaktamana prata yogin yunyamarasraya asansyan. It is said that we must develop attachment to Krishna. Somehow or other. See? Attachment we must develop. Is there anyone who is not attached? Who can say he's not attached? We're all attached to something. I kissed this ground where I was born. Why? What was the first thing you did when you took birth there? You cried. So, you know, you weren't that happy then. Why now you kiss that ground? And so on. So, the place of birth, we are attached. So many attachments. So many. But all these attachments, what is the value of them? All temporary things, all will be destroyed. So one must develop attachment to the Supreme Lord. He is the origin of everything. And that's what we see in great saintly personalities. They have attachment to the Supreme Lord, and therefore they have that deep inner strength and happiness. So Krishna, the all-attractive, is actually the Supreme Personality of God. That's his best name. He has many names, but that is his best name, all-attractive. So, attachment to Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything. Aham sarvashyapadava matasavam pravartate. It is said that he is the origin of all material, all spiritual worlds. And the wise who know this perfectly, they worship him with love. So that's the point. So spiritual life is based on love. So now we get to the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, and it goes on like this. One must basically, says, man manabhava matpato majajivam namaskaru, bow down to Krishna, and know him, bhakti jana piyosi me, know him to be your best friend. So many friends, family, so many relations, so many. And how much can you rely on them? You rely on them so much, and then it doesn't work out at the end. And then, even what can they do? Bhagavatam says, Atma Sanyesu Asatsu Api, that they are fallible soldiers themselves. They're in the same boat. They can't win either. They're in trouble also. I'll save you. First save yourself. Okay. You know? It's like you've fallen into the ocean. Me too. But I have 3 swimming diplomas. I do. And it includes life saving. So I know actually how to do life saving. But what's the point when we've fallen into the ocean? I can take you by the head. You know, hold your head on my chest and swim on my back and keep your head above the water and take you along. But we're in the ocean, so what's it going to do? We're both going to drown anyway. Me with my 3 swimming diplomas and you without any. Right? You know, we're both going to go down because we're in the ocean. So Is there anybody who doesn't go down in this ocean of material existence? I'll save you. Yeah, you save me today and you're dead tomorrow. You know, who saved who? I mean, let's be real. Who can save anyone if you look at it like that? So that kind of saving is not really very important. If we understand that we are eternal. So, therefore, we go forward and surrender to Krishna and dedicate our life to Krishna. It should be like that. But then, you know, I jump a few chapters, I go, well, there's a universal form, and Krishna shows that he is the all-pervading, the origin of everything, and so on. But Arjuna is a bit afraid of that form, because death is also part of that form. And all the heroes of the battlefield of Kurukshetra disappear in the many mouths of that form. That's not so attractive. So then he asks the Lord, please take your original form. Then the Lord takes a four-armed form. So everyone can see 1, 2, 3, 4. That's not ordinary. You see someone with four arms, then you know there's something extraordinary. Have you seen? Then you have not seen God. So, in Vedic texts, it explains he has four arms. But then, the origin of that Chaturbhuj four-armed form is Krishna, the two-armed form. And Krishna then. So, Arjuna asks Krishna, take your original form. He takes the form of Krishna. So at the end of the 11th chapter, we have all the knowledge, and we know there is no other thing to do in life than to surrender to Krishna. But then comes chapter 12. And chapter 12 is the chapter for the failures. Chapter 12 is for the ones who know, but who still don't get it together. That's chapter 12. So anybody who's a 12 can, like, 12 on his shirt, you know, a big 12 on the back, or, you know, a 12. If you are a 12, what can be done, you know? Not an elf, but a 12. You know? A 12, there are a number of verses in this 12th chapter which point out that if you cannot follow the rules and regulations, that is a difficulty. There are many rules and regulations. If one cannot follow those, then Krishna says, then work for me. Yeah, okay, but sometimes that's not possible due to family conditions. They will not allow it. You want to work for Krishna, but they won't allow it. Then what? Then we can meditate on Krishna. So, like, we can do that. We can try and meditate. Well, like that, there's chapter 12. If you cannot follow, what to do? So that's also there. The remainder of the Gita is in the 13th chapter, there is an amazing list of pure qualities. Amanitvam, Adambitam, that one must be free of pride. Adambitam, one must be very tolerant. Amanitvam. Like that, there are many, verse 8 to 12, sort of qualities you can paste them on the wall and look at them every day as a meditation. But then in the 15th chapter, in the final verse, we get a description of Hridaya Durbalyam, of the weakness of heart. And that weakness of heart, that is our obstacle, pride. The desire to be somebody, the desire to be glorified, the desire to be worshipped, the desire, and therefore the tendency to pretend, to present oneself greater and better than one is. Yeah. all weakness of heart. So all this has to, one has to let it go, as petty and small, as not important. Anyway, but meanwhile, we have all this knowledge. We know we should be transcendental. We know we should just serve Krishna, but we can't. Then what can we do? We can meditate more on what it means to be a devotee. 16th chapter is really interesting, because in the 16th chapter, in the first six verses, it describes the divine qualities, our qualities, and in the rest of the chapter, it describes the demoniac qualities, the qualities of the neighbors. So that's a great chapter, you know. Because you can really, I mean, if you need some entertainment, I mean, that's a chapter to read, you know, especially that part about the neighbors, you know. Like, yeah, right, spot on, you know, exactly. Perfect fit. Well done, yes. Fully, I'm in full agreement. Of course, there's another way to read the 16th chapter. And that is to consider that Sasarupa Maharaj summed it up in a book that he wrote. He wrote so many books. But there's one book, it's called Am I a Demon or a Vaishnava? And that's a very interesting question. Yeah. What am I? Because, yes, that's how it is in this time. There are some demoniac tendencies in everyone. And one can see that the whole 16th chapter, some of these qualities are in us. So that chapter is like a mirror, actually, which makes you more aware of who you are and what you should be. Anyway, after that, you just feel like, oh gosh, what if you come to the conclusion after reading the chapter, actually, I'm a demon. I've always known it, deep down. I've tried to ignore it. And for all this time, I've been chanting Hare Krishna. I've been trying to be a devotee. But after studying the Gita, I finally realized it. I'm a demon. And what do I do now? You know. All right, so, you know, you kind of feel hopeless after that. Fortunately, then, there's the 17th chapter, which saves us right there and then. Because the 17th chapter is describing the three modes of material nature. And it just, what Srila Prabhupada, it describes the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. And then, see, I heard about that before, and I heard that you're supposed to be in the mode of goodness. Well, my goodness, have I tried to be in the mode of goodness, you know, until steam came out of my ears. In other words, no, that was the mode of passion. Not easy. So, how to be in the mode of goodness? No, Srila Prabhupada has an interesting reference in a purport, which I thought was really revealing. Prabhupada didn't say you have to be in the mode of goodness, he said you have to associate with the mode of goodness. Well, that we can do. I can't be in goodness, but I can associate with goodness. Everything, okay, cleanliness, purity, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, religiousness, equipoised, you know, not so quickly disturbed by things that are going on. I can try and create that atmosphere and then stay in such an atmosphere. That will help. That will help. So the 17th chapter is when you're not transcendental. When you're not transcendental, when you realize at the end of the 16th chapter, actually I'm a demon, I've tried all this time to be a devotee, but I don't really make it, what do I do now? Then associate with the mode of goodness. And then in the 18th chapter we go through the whole Gita one more time, and at the end of it all, we just have to surrender. Sarva dharma paricaya. Give everything up. Give it up. Serve Krishna. Just serve Krishna. Abandon all variety of activity and just serve Krishna. How? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, from Ram Manabir, but not that we have to change our condition, we just stay where we are and just make it pure. Wherever we are, make that pure. No need to change our lives. Wherever we already are, stay there. Of course, you know, if you're in the slaughterhouse, then maybe, maybe move next door. Or a little further away, if possible. I mean, so there are some places which we may have to leave, some occupations we may have to give up. But in principle, we do not have to give up everything and change our whole life. Because Krishna consciousness is something that can be practiced in the middle of the world. I was... Well, there are some filmmakers, and they made two films. One is called Baraka, and the other one is Sansara. And they're very good filmmakers. And they are sort of looking for the sacred. And in Baraka, you see the sacred in nature, God in nature, and they really show some amazing things, and they also show religious people. So then the second film is Sansara, and that's basically about the Tibetans. And it begins with a group of people who are going to a cave. And they open up this cave, there's some sort of door in front, they open it up, and they go inside a group of monks. And there is this yogi inside, long hair, long beard, long nails, really long. He's been sitting there, obviously, for a long, long time. And they're going, trying to wake him up. And they have a hard time waking him up. I mean, something like... Anyway, he's deeply, deeply in a trance somewhere. They're shouting in his ears. They have one of these bowls. Then they put some wood over the edge of the bowl and it makes this high, high tone, you know. Higher, much higher. Anyway, sort of like piercing in the ear. It's the combination of the two of us that makes the sound. Anyway, they try in different ways to wake him up, and after about 20 minutes, they sort of got him half awake. I mean, his eyes are open, but he's still not speaking, he's still not like relating to his environment. Slowly, they put him on a horse, they shave him up, they dress him like a monk, and they take him to a monastery, and sort of gradually, he's coming back. Gradually. So, if you look at a kind of spiritual process like that, where you have to go so far away from the world and close yourself off so far from the world that you can't come back to the world anymore, that's one approach. But that's not Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness is... We can be in the middle of the world, downtown, or in the middle of the countryside. It doesn't matter. Because nothing needs to change. All we have to do is, instead of work for ourselves, work for Krishna. And there are some rules that Krishna gives. But just please Krishna. So like that, we can... This is very practical. It's for everyone. It can be done by everyone. It's not that you have to become somebody else. You can be who you are, but bring out another side of yourself. The pure side. That's Krishna consciousness. Give up impurities. By simply offering what we eat to Krishna. And Krishna says what you can offer. Patram pushpam phalam tuyam yome bhakti priyasati. A fruit, a flower, a leaf, some water. Things like this. Vegetarian. Not vegan. Vegetarian. Milk and cheese and butter and srikant. vegan is like, it's good for Buddhists, that, but not for the devotees, because vegan, sometimes vegans speak very strong to devotees. They say, you're still part of the death culture when you eat some cheese. But no, then our answer to that should be, no, you are part of the birth and death culture. It's not. It's the birth and death culture that people are a part of. Life after life, staying in a material world. And it's nice if you don't want to kill animals. Then you go up in the universe. But you still die, and the animals also still die. But if you engage in devotional service, it's a whole other thing. Then you get out of the birth and death culture. So we offer the milk of the cows. And then we can take. Because if you offer it to Krishna, the cow gets eternal benefit. The cow may die, but that soul got eternal benefit. Whatever we do for Krishna, the benefit is for the soul, eternal. Therefore, vegan is a toothless tiger. I'm sorry. You know, I'm a vegan. And then he opens his mouth. No teeth. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, when you meet a tiger and he has no teeth, what will you say? Did you forget something? Go home. No, I'm sorry. So in this way, we can live a natural life in the world, but according to what is pleasing to Krishna. It's so simple. But we don't have to move out into a cave and all these things. So Bhagavad Gita is therefore very practical. Don't have to just wear black. In some religions you have to wear black only. Black clothes only. But in ours you can wear all kinds of colors. But saffron is the best. Why is it so? No, because the dust on Krishna's lotus feet is saffron. What do you think of that? That's a good argument, isn't it? How can you argue with that? So anyway, we have our kirtan, we have the Bhagavad Gita, we have Krishna Prasadam, and we have each other. We have each other, devotees. We may be all different, but somehow or other, we like Krishna, and we like to chant Hare Krishna. And that is our saving grace. So we have each other in that way. And, you know, if somehow or other, we can carry on with this for the rest of our life. Not just for a while, but for our life. That is the challenge, to do it for the whole life. Generally, you know, do it for a while and then change. But no, for a whole life. Somehow or other we can do it for the rest of our life. Serving Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, taking Krishna prasad, reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Then, spiritual world is next. And there, eternal life, blissful life, there. No more fear, no anxiety. It's the place to be. Back to Godhead, therefore, is our motto. And if you want to give someone a gift subscription on Back to Godhead magazine, if you already have one yourself. Otherwise, give one to yourself. If you don't have one, you can give one to yourself. And if you have already yourself, then give a gift subscription of Bhagavad Gita, of Back to God magazine. That's a good idea. Any questions? Any comments?
It's difficult counting, but it's difficult to count these 8,400,000 species. But biologists are getting closer. I read that the other day, and now I forgot the number again, but it wasn't that far away. But they're getting there. They're getting there. So, 8,400,000 species. It doesn't mean that, there are so many different kinds of dogs and that all these dogs are different species. No. Dog is one species, and then pigeon is one species, and then, within there are so many varieties. Human being is one species, and then within so many varieties. Other questions? Okay, well, then I'm sort of slowly getting ready to fly out of the door because I've been flying all night. Maybe I'm still flying. I just flew in this morning. So, maybe go lie down for a while. Sounds like a good idea. But it's very nice. I still wanted to take advantage of this evening and not let it go because it's hectic times. Durban Rati Yatra is coming up and so many things, and then before I know it, my stay in South Africa will be over. So therefore, I thought at least today I should go to Pretoria. Yes.
Like no japa. So, how do you keep the consistency?
Yeah, it cannot just in japa consist. I'll turn it off. That thing. Yeah, it was very helpful. Consistency in japa is. On the lowest level, comes from knowledge. On a higher level, comes from love. And when you love Krishna, then you love chanting japa also. But when we have knowledge, even when we don't love chanting japa, we still chant because we know that this will protect us, this will uplift us, this will do it. So we need knowledge. We need more knowledge. We cannot just deal with our moods. See, it's not only how we feel. We also need to with intelligence, say, okay, what's good for me? I got to do what's good for me. I can't just do everything I feel. It's just knowledge helps us. When you're, a kid, right? For a kid, there is no stealing, man. A kid can basically take anything and no one takes it as stealing. Oh, yes, yes. As a kid, you can walk into the house of a stranger, take an apple, right? And just give it to you. You try and do that as an adult and see what happens. It doesn't work, because as an adult, they expect from you that you have knowledge and that you know. So in spiritual life also, in the beginning we can be just very spontaneous, but after a while we realize that that's not enough. We need knowledge, and then that knowledge will do it. And I understand that it's better to chant, and therefore I'm doing it, even when there are days that it's like tough. Like this morning, I chanted on the plane, and then I turned the light off. I turned a little my reading light on, but then sometimes I was dozing a little bit, and then the stewardess was all the time turning my light off. I said, "No, I want it on." "No, but you're resting." "Because no, I want to chant. I want to stay awake." Anyway, so sometimes we struggle. The three modes of material nature make it difficult. But we chant because of knowledge. I have sometimes chanted, but it was nice, sometimes very difficult. I've chanted while I had malaria. It was very... It took the whole day to get through 16 rounds. But eventually I got there. But then I was more sick even than that. And then somebody brought my beads, and I lost them in the ocean of the bed, and I never found them. So then it was maybe that time I didn't manage to chant 16 rounds. But otherwise, we should, based on knowledge. And then some love would also come. Okay. Well, thank you for coming on a short notice. I know it was all very, very short.
Oh, that's why it's been serious.
Sorry, would you call, just following on what you were just talking about, so would you call chanting with love the example you gave of the monk that was, or the yogi that was found in the hills?
No, I don't think he was chanting with love. I think he was meditating on the basis of knowledge. He's meditating on the basis of knowledge. Now, chanting with love is that you don't lock yourself off, but that you start to give. Love means giving. So love means you give to everyone. When you're full of love, you go around the world to uplift people and give. Yeah. You just give everything for the well-being of others. That's love. Yeah. Well, with that, I love you all very much. So it's very nice to see you all again after a long time. But now I'm going to be a little selfish and sort of gradually move towards the door. So we'll see you all.